is baloney. His claim is that the neuroscience assumption that the physical brain gives rise to subjective experience is full of holes, or perhaps baloney, and he takes great pains to explain why. He cites a 2007 article in one of the top scientific journals, Nature, which showed that realism, remember, this is the common sense assumption that there is an external reality with real properties that exists independently of observation, is not compatible with quantum theory nor with experimental results. The authors of that Nature paper concluded their discussion with a statement that, when you really grok it, should make your hair stand up. We believe that our results lend strong support to the view that any future extension of quantum theory that is in agreement with experiments must abandon certain features of realistic descriptions. What that means is that holding fast to any simple form of realism is headed in the wrong direction. Or in simpler terms, reality depends on observation. But who or what is doing the observation? This, too, was addressed in a 2005 article in Nature by Johns Hopkins University physicist Richard Henry. In a paper entitled The Mental Universe, Henry wrote, "Physicists shy from the truth because the truth is so alien to everyday physics. A common way to evade the mental universe is to invoke decoherence, the notion that the physical environment is sufficient to create reality independent of the human mind. Yet the idea that any irreversible act of amplification is necessary to collapse the wave function is known to be wrong. The universe is entirely mental." The import of such articles appearing in a journal such as Nature cannot be overstated. Nature is the orthodox voice of the scientific mainstream. This is telling us that from a trusted mainstream perspective, it is now acceptable to discuss ideas that would have caused a medieval esotericist to scowl and whisper, "Hush, the Inquisition will hear you." While it's acceptable to publish interpretations of physics in Nature, it's not acceptable to directly confront what some regard as the metaphysical foundations of science, even though that's exactly what those articles are doing. You're not likely to find Nature publishing studies about magic anytime soon. Indeed, in 1980, when a minor miracle occurred and Nature published a positive study on remote viewing, it raised such a firestorm that academics were fainting in the street. The following year, British biologist Rupert Sheldrake's first book, A New Science of Life, was reviewed by John Maddox, then the editor of Nature. Maddox wrote, "This infuriating tract is the best candidate for burning there has been for many years." Then, with righteous indignation, he added, "Sheldrake is putting forward magic instead of science, and that can be condemned in exactly the language that the Pope used to condemn Galileo, and for the same reason. It is heresy." The definition of heresy in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary is adherence to a religious opinion contrary to church dogma. Maddox's church was science, which isn't supposed to have a dogmatic set of acceptable beliefs. But such is the fear of magic. It caused the editor of one of the most prestigious scientific journals in the world to forget that science is not a religion. Mainstream science does not take kindly to the resurrection of magical concepts, but that is what we are seeing in experimental tests of quantum theory. Those papers are not thought of as being supportive of magic because they aren't viewed from an esoteric perspective. But the underlying concepts point firmly toward the perennial philosophy. As Bernardo Kastrup writes, "If idealism is true and all reality is indeed in mind, then the simplest hypothesis is that there is but one mind, one irreducible medium in which the dance of existence unfolds. Otherwise, one would have to postulate that mind has arisen irreducibly countless times in nature, once for every conscious being. This is, of course, a tremendously inflationary postulate, so we will stick to the most parsimonious alternative. There is but one irreducible medium of mind, the sole ontological primitive of all reality. There is a growing number of books that dive deeply into the historical, philosophical, experimental, and theoretical support for the notion that consciousness is fundamental. Three that I recommend for those who'd like to study this topic in detail are Irreducible Mind, a comprehensive review of the many challenges to prevailing mechanistic ideas about consciousness; One Mind, which lays out in exquisite detail why the notion of a single collective mind has been taken very seriously by many scientists and scholars; and Beyond Physicalism, which makes a persuasive case that today's neuroscience assumption that consciousness is a meaningless side effect of meat machines, that is, us, is evidently wrong. These books don't mention magic per se, but they do discuss the type of worldview that is completely compatible with the reality of magic. Consciousness and Magic. Let's assume that the esoteric traditions are correct, and that personal consciousness, lowercase c, and universal consciousness, capital C, are made out of the same stuff. Personal consciousness, lowercase c, may be thought of not as a tiny piece of capital C that has been broken off and is separate from the rest of the universe, but rather as the tip of an extremely large iceberg of consciousness. With this idea in mind, then, divination works because capital C is more fundamental than the physical concepts of time and space, so lowercase c, too, can perceive what is ordinarily experienced as past, present, and future. Most people, most of the time, don't identify with capital C, but when that happens, in the magical state of gnosis or the yogic state of samadhi, then divination is perfectly normal. What lowercase c can express about capital C is severely limited because capital C is inconceivably larger than everyday reality. As such, capital C is also beyond ordinary concepts and language. That's why mystics are always frustrated when asked to describe their experience. The moment we step beyond the ordinary, language fails. Force of will works because the physical world emerges from and is modulated by capital C. Our personal will, expressed by lowercase c, can also create and modulate physical reality, but not to a great extent. This may be due to what might be called reality inertia. That is, when an elephant shakes its body, the tip of its tail will whip around wildly, but if the tail swats a fly, the elephant's body won't budge. Force of will effects observed in the laboratory and in everyday life are generally small because you're like the tail trying to push the elephant. The relationship between personal intention and lowercase c may be thought of in this way. Lowercase c is like a battery, and intention is like an electrical circuit. The circuit is a design that's poised to act, but without the power of lowercase c, the circuit won't accomplish anything. Intention, the urge to accomplish a goal, might be an entirely human-centric concept, but it might also be an inherent property of lowercase c. At this point in our understanding of consciousness, we don't know what it's capable of without immediately assuming that it is necessarily human. While lowercase c is mainly interested in our personal universe, capital C, in some enigmatic way, may well be involved with the workings of the rest of the cosmos. Perhaps as we enjoy playing a video game, capital C may delight in directing the path of the Andromeda Galaxy as part of a universal pinball game. Theurgy works because the human physical form is just one of a potentially infinite number of ways that consciousness can be embodied. There is no reason for the body that hosts lowercase c to necessarily be physical, at least not in the way that we currently understand physicality. Until the beginning of the 20th century, scientists studying the physical world did not realize that there was anything below the surface. Nor did scientists, psychiatrists, and psychologists studying the mind realize that the mind, too, existed in layers below the surface. As science advances, it continues to probe progressively deeper levels of reality. At some point, a threshold may be reached where further dives may not be possible without a tighter integration of consciousness and physics, because those two apparently different topics are probably an illusory separation as well. As eminent neuroscientist Christoph Koch has said, consciousness is really physics from the inside. Seen from the inside, it's experience. Seen from the outside, it's what we know as physics, chemistry, and biology. Eventually, we may reach the domain that the esoteric traditions call gnosis. At that stage, gnosis is not just a state of awareness, nor is it a state of physics. Such dualistic distinctions only appear at higher levels. Instead, ultra-deep layers of reality may be more like physicist David Bohm's concept of what he called an implicate order, an inherently mental, potential domain from which physical reality emerges. This emergence is what we've been calling force-of-will magic, for want of a more accurate term. At that stage, as Gregory Dawes writes in Parergon, the Journal of the Australian and New Zealand Association for Medieval and Early Modern Studies, the distinction between magic and science becomes difficult. It cannot be found in magic's invoking of occult powers, for modern science also invokes powers that remain occult, that is to say, hidden, even when they can be demonstrated experimentally and described in precise mathematical terms. Modern science differs from magic in its understanding of the powers involved. Hierarchies of knowledge. Sketches of reality can be instructive as metaphors, but how do we actually get from today's halting understanding of deep reality to some future time when we have a scientifically testable understanding? Today's hierarchy of knowledge assumes that the foundations of reality are physical, matter and energy. From that domain, elementary particles and energies combine in complex ways and emerge into the realm we call chemistry. From there, biology emerges, and then psychology. In each of these hierarchical stages, higher levels emerge from lower levels. The higher levels often contain new properties that the lower levels do not share, and that could not be predicted from the lower levels. The elements hydrogen and oxygen can be combined to form H2O, the water molecule, but neither hydrogen nor oxygen is wet. Somehow, at the top of this hierarchy, a new property emerges. We call it consciousness. But this property is radically different from all of the other properties emerging from lower levels, because consciousness no longer has ordinary physical properties. Philosophers call subjective experience qualia, because experience is an internal quality rather than a measurable external quantity. It is sometimes argued that the brain must be generating consciousness because an anesthesiologist can apply a drug cocktail to your bloodstream and reliably switch off conscious awareness. But that doesn't mean the awareness was caused by brain activity. For example, about 1 in 1,000 people undergoing surgery discover to their distress that they're fully conscious while under general anesthesia. We call emergence of a new property into a higher level an instance of upward causation, because the arrow of causation seems to point upward in this knowledge hierarchy. But higher levels can also influence levels below. Nobel laureate Roger Sperry called this property downwards causation. As an example, if a person picks up a pencil and begins to write, the electrons that compose that pencil will all start to move in ways that, from the electrons' perspective, they'd have no way of predicting, or, in an anthropometric sense, understanding. Deep confusion over what philosophers have called the mind-body problem has persisted for millennia without resolution, ever since philosophers first identified it as a problem. Consciousness remains a problem even with the fancy neuroimaging tools available today. The impasse has led to a growing sense that radically new approaches to understanding consciousness may be required. We increasingly find such proposals in philosophy, physics, the neurosciences, and psychology. Here are seven common ways proposed to understand the relationship between consciousness, pure awareness, and physical reality. These interpretations lead to different likelihoods of the existence of magic. Three of the seven would say that magic is impossible or unlikely. Three would say it is possible. One says it must exist. 1. Reductive materialism, with a side order of consciousness. Matter, or energy, organizes itself in such a way that it eventually produces consciousness. From this view, subjective awareness is nothing but recursive loops in the brain. This is sometimes called nothing butism. Magic? No way. 2. Reductive materialism without added consciousness. Matter organizes itself to produce the illusion of consciousness. This is the world of zombies, long a favorite idea in the eccentric view known as behaviorism, which denies the existence of consciousness and is still taken seriously by some zombie philosophers and neuroscientists. Magic? Impossible. 3. Soft idealism. Consciousness is primary, but matter emerges out of consciousness, as do the brain-based activities that we call cognition and perception. Magic? Possible. 4. Hard idealism. Consciousness is primary, and matter exists only as an appearance within consciousness. In other words, at fundamental levels, the world is not made of matter and energy. It consists of something much more abstract, pure awareness. This is what Bernardo Kastrup argues and what other hardcore idealists propose. Magic? Obvious. 5. Straight-up dualism. Both consciousness and matter exist, but neither arises from the other. They are separate, primitive substances, like the warp and woof of the fabric of reality. This idea is most famously associated with French philosopher René Descartes' famous quip, "I think, therefore I am." It is vaguely similar to the yoga theory called Samkhya. I discuss this in more detail later. Magic? Possible. 6. Wishy-washy monism. Consciousness and matter are two different ways of looking at the same reality, like the two sides of the same coin, or the two apparent sides of a Möbius strip. Magic? Possible. 7. Cynical nihilism. Neither consciousness nor matter exists. Everything's a pointless illusion. This is the refuge of suicidal philosophers, nihilistic skeptics, and a majority of college sophomores. No magic for you. Reality and information. With these seven interpretations in mind, an interesting scientific trend is emerging. It used to be that we'd expect only philosophers enthusiastic about Eastern or Western versions of idealism to talk openly about reality emerging from consciousness. But now we see an increasing number of mainstream scientists and scholars openly proposing this idea. Some suggest that reality literally is information, like a cosmic conscious hologram. Others talk about reality as a mathematical or supercomputer-based simulation. A 2016 article in the online magazine BBC Earth cites technology entrepreneur Elon Musk, MIT cosmologist Alan Guth, MIT physicist Seth Lloyd, University of Oxford philosopher Nick Bostrom, Nobel laureate astrophysicist George Smoot, and others, as fans of the idea that we're living inside a simulation. These themes have been extensively explored since the 1940s in science fiction literature, television programs, and movies, perhaps most famously as the central theme in the Matrix movie trilogy. The connection between these ideas and magic is obvious, at least to magicians. As Patrick Dunn, a magician specializing in semiotics, signs and symbols, wrote in his 2005 book, Postmodern Magic, "Information does everything we claim energy or spirits do. It is non-physical, yet interacts with matter. It is manipulated with the human mind and stored in symbols. It can be copied, transported, and transformed instantly, and science even studies it. So the information paradigm is a splendid model for what we're doing when we do magic. After all, the brain deals with information in quantities far greater than the minuscule electrical impulses passing between its neurons. If my mind can cause change on a symbolic level, perhaps it really can cause change. Perhaps the information passing through my mind also passes through the world at large, everything being connected to the same matrix." Let's examine this trend in more detail. In 2013, the Foundational Questions Institute held an essay contest on John Wheeler's famous question, "It from bit or bit from it?" The contest attracted 170 entries. The Institute's 2015 contest was on the topic, "The Mysterious Connection Between Physics and Mathematics." In 2017, the theme was, "How Can Mindless Mathematical Laws Give Rise to Aims and Intention?" The director of the Foundational Questions Institute, MIT physicist Max Tegmark, described the burgeoning interest in these questions in his 2014 book, Our Mathematical Universe. "There's something very mathematical about our universe, and the more carefully we look, the more math we seem to find. So what do we make of all these hints of mathematics in our physical world? Most of my physics colleagues take them to mean that nature is for some reason described by mathematics, at least approximately, and leave it at that. But I'm convinced that there's more to it." Tegmark assumes that there exists an external physical reality completely independent of us humans. But as we've already discussed, there are good reasons to believe that reality is actually not completely independent of observation. So what Tegmark is getting at is that the abstract structures provided by mathematics seem to have a life of their own. They don't just describe it. In some sense, he believes, the purely symbolic language of mathematics literally is the universe. This resonates with an earlier consideration by Nobel laureate physicist Eugene Wigner, who marveled over the astonishing ability of mathematics to accurately describe the behavior of the physical world. He noted that in spite of the baffling complexities of the world, some features are stable enough, and we've been clever or lucky enough to identify them as laws of nature. Without those regularities, science would never have developed. Wigner believed it was neither natural nor expected that such laws of nature should exist, much less that we've been able to discover some of them. Like Wigner, mathematician Sir Roger Penrose also noted that some of the basic physical laws are precise to an extraordinary degree, far beyond the precision of our direct sense experiences or the combined calculational powers of all conscious individuals within the ken of mankind. Penrose cited Newton's gravitational theory as applied to the movements of the solar system. "The theory is precise to one part in 10 million. Einstein's theory of relativity improved on Newton's by another factor of 10 million, and it also predicted bizarre new effects such as black holes and gravitational lenses. When astrophysicists went looking for these unexpected phenomena, to everyone's astonishment, except maybe Einstein's, they found them. Penrose suggested that the amazing accuracy of these mathematical predictions was not the result of a new theory being introduced only to make sense of vast amounts of new data. The extra precision was seen only after each theory had been produced. One way to interpret these astounding coincidences is that pure math is in contact with Plato's concept of primordial forms or ideas. This again implies that we live within a symbolic reality. For those who insist that mind and consciousness are nothing more than bioelectrical circuits in the brain, then mathematics too must be nothing more than the brain's representation of a pre-existing, independent, external physical world. That seems reasonable enough until we realize that the symbols generated by 3 pounds of neural tissue somehow describe not only vast swatches of the physical universe to an unbelievably precise degree, but they also predict phenomena that strongly contradict common sense, such as quantum entanglement and black holes. How is it possible for a hunk of warm, wet tissue to not only describe itself in exquisite detail, but also describe exotic realms that the human body and brain cannot access through its ordinary senses, and that must have been around for billions of years before we developed methods of detecting them? And do all this with mind-boggling accuracy? That puzzling question suggests that maybe the brain didn't dream up these ideas after all. Rather, the ideas dreamed up the brain. If that's the case, then, as magic proposes, we really do shape the world based on our expectations. Think of the thousands of physicists and engineers at CERN's Large Hadron Collider near Geneva, Switzerland, all working feverishly for years to detect the Higgs boson. In 2012, they rejoiced at finally seeing something that looked like the Higgs. But some viewed that success as a little too convenient, as Harriet Kim Jarlett posted on the CERN website in October 2016. When researchers discovered the Higgs boson in 2012, it was a huge moment of achievement. It showed theorists had been right to look towards the Standard Model for answers about our universe. But then the particle acted just like the theorists said it would. It obeyed every rule they predicted. If it had acted just slightly differently, it would have raised many questions about the theory and our universe. Instead, it raised few questions and gave no new clues about where to look next. In other words, the theorists had done too good a job. A symbolic reality. Mathematics is the language of physics, and Max Tegmark thinks that mathematics is the universe. But despite the appeal of symbolic and informational models of reality, there's a big problem. Gödel's incompleteness theorems. Mathematician Kurt Gödel proved, that's a word not to be taken lightly, that no system of mathematics can be considered complete. Any non-trivial mathematical or logic system will be either incomplete or inconsistent. And that, in turn, means the universe cannot be completely modeled with mathematics. Said another way, a symbolic language by itself can describe physical reality amazingly well, but something will always be left out. Is that something outside the physical world, meaning non-physical? Could the missing element be consciousness? From a religious perspective, a theist may enthusiastically agree and point to biblical scripture, such as John chapter 1, verse 1, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." That poetic phrase is intriguing, but poetry doesn't provide much explanatory power. For that, we'll have to turn to science, but it's not going to be easy. As physicists Sarah Walker and Paul Davies explained, we propose that the hard problem of life is the problem of how information can affect the world. We suspect that a full resolution of the hard problem will not ultimately be reducible to known physical principles. If we are so lucky as to stumble on a new fundamental understanding of life, it could be such a radical departure from what we know now that it might be left to the next generation of physicists to reconcile the unification of life with other domains of physics. The trend in information physics suggests that the hierarchical structure of science remains exactly the same as before, except that now the bottom of the hierarchy is universal consciousness, capital C. The physical world emerges from, capital C, and the top of the pyramid is the mind, meaning the brain's machinery involved in information processing, cognition, and perception. From this perspective, we enjoy conscious awareness not because the brain generates it, but because capital C permeates every layer of the physical world, just like electrons permeate every layer above the discipline of physics. Based on this hierarchy, which maintains everything currently known in science, so we don't have to throw away any of our textbooks, magic is no longer an impossible anomaly. It's now a predictable consequence of understanding reality from a more comprehensive perspective. Consciousness as fundamental. Scholarly interest in consciousness as a fundamental property of reality has always existed, mainly among philosophers. But now it's increasingly appearing within science, and unlike in times past, scientists today are far more open to this possibility. In 2014, the online journal Frontiers in Human Neuroscience, the number one most cited journal in academic psychology, published an article entitled "A Call for an Open, Informed Study of All Aspects of Consciousness." It was signed by 101 scientists from universities and research institutes around the world. As of mid-2017, this article was viewed nearly 50,000 times, which is greater than 99% of all articles published in the Frontiers collection of 59 open-access journals. The article called for increased tolerance for thinking about consciousness in new ways, including ways that challenge the materialistic, scientific worldview. This trend can also be seen in a 2015 article in the ultra-Orthodox Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society. Giulio Tononi of the University of Wisconsin and Christoph Koch of the Allen Institute for Brain Science, both influential thought leaders in mainstream neuroscience, wrote, "Is consciousness, subjective experience, not only in other people's heads, but also in the head of animals, and perhaps everywhere, pervading the cosmos, as in old panpsychist traditions and in the Beatles' song?" While these kinds of questions may seem scientifically inappropriate, we argue below that they can be approached in a principled and testable manner. The long-held taboo that once prohibited scientists from even mentioning the word consciousness, especially the heretical idea that consciousness might pervade the cosmos, required that Tononi and Koch add an apology to their proposal. But in a less formal publication, Koch was more forthcoming. In a 2014 article in Scientific American entitled "Is Consciousness Universal?" he wrote, "The mental is too radically different for it to arise gradually from the physical. This emergence of subjective feelings from physical stuff appears inconceivable and is at odds with a basic precept of physical thinking, the ur-conservation law, ex nihilo nihil fit, out of nothing comes nothing. The phenomenal hails from a kingdom other than the physical and is subject to different laws. We've already discussed Max Tegmark's ideas and the essay contest of the Foundational Questions Institute, but we also find statements like this in 2005, offered by the eminent quantum physicist Anton Zeilinger of the University of Vienna. Reality and information are the same. We need a new concept which encompasses both. In a sense, reality and information are the two sides of the same coin. I feel that this is the message of the quantum. Or this, by New York University science writer Charles Seif in his 2007 book, Decoding the Universe. Information appears quite literally to shape our universe. Or an idea by physicist Vlatko Vedral in his similarly titled 2012 book, Decoding Reality. Information, and not matter or energy or love, is the building block on which everything is constructed. Information is far more fundamental than matter or energy. Information can also be used to explain the origin and behavior of microscopic interactions such as energy and matter. Information, in contrast to matter and energy, is the only concept that we currently have that can explain its own origin. Entire journal issues are now devoted to the mathematics and physics of consciousness. And post-materialistic ideas are appearing in new journals dedicated to consciousness studies, including Psychology of Consciousness, published by the voice of mainstream academic psychology, the American Psychological Association, APA. In 2016, the APA also published a book entitled Transcendent Mind by psychologist Imanse Barras of King's University College in Canada and neuroscientist Julia Mossbridge of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. Barras and Mossbridge emphasized this growing movement. We are in the midst of a sea change. Receding from view is materialism, whereby physical phenomena are assumed to be primary and consciousness is regarded as secondary. Approaching our sights is a complete reversal of perspective. According to this alternative view, consciousness is primary and the physical is secondary. In other words, materialism is receding and giving way to ideas about reality in which consciousness plays a key role. The same trend can be found in biology. Physician Neil Thies and physicist Menas Kafatos propose in a 2016 article in the journal Communicative and Integrative Biology that non-dual awareness is foundational to the universe, not arising from the interactions or structures of higher-level phenomena. The cosmos can be understood to derive from awareness, rather than being suffused by it or giving rise to it. Medical researchers, too, are sensing a shift from solely materialistic models of health and healing. This can be seen as an exponential rise of publications on the role of spirituality in health and healing. Based on a search on PubMed, the U.S. government's online National Library of Medicine, we find that from 1940 to 2016, some 2,645 articles were published on the topic of spirituality in medicine. Nearly all of those articles were published since 2000. Before 1980, a grand total of 2 articles were published, indicating that until the 21st century, mainstream medicine had little interest in non-material concepts like spirituality. The same trend is evident in complexity theory. Stuart A. Kaufman, one of the principals at the famed Santa Fe Institute and a pioneer in the study of complex systems, writes in his 2016 book, Humanity in a Creative Universe, "From Newton we achieved and are now trapped by the view that there is a theory of everything, reductive materialism, whose laws will govern and logically entail all that can or does become since the Big Bang, but are themselves somehow outside of the universe. This is the Pythagorean dream of a mathematizable world. I aim to show that this view is surely false for the living world and perhaps aspects of the abiotic world. To solve the enigma, I will propose that we are conscious and so are quantum variables, such as electrons and protons exchanging photons measuring one another, where measurement is mediated, I claim, by consciously observing one another. I cannot see any way of showing that electrons consciously measure one another, but Dean Radin's experiments are a first hint that we can show how human consciousness can mediate measurement, perhaps even non-locally. This all leads to a vast panpsychism in which all quantum measurement is mediated by mind, conscious and free-willed, as part of the furniture of the entire universe. It is the enigma all the way down. Mind is part of the actual becoming of the universe. In philosophy, the discipline that has been struggling to understand the nature of reality thousands of years before science appeared, we increasingly find opinions like those of philosopher Philip Goff of the Central European University in Budapest. Goff's position in a 2017 essay was bluntly entitled, "Panpsychism is crazy, but it's also most probably true." Philosophers Robert Kuhns of the University of Texas at Austin and George Beeler of Yale University write in their 2010 book, The Waning of Materialism, "Materialism is waning in a number of significant respects, one of which is the ever-growing number of major philosophers who reject materialism, or at least have strong sympathies with anti-materialist views. It is, of course, commonly thought that over the course of the last 60 or so years, materialism achieved hegemony in academic philosophy. It is therefore surprising that an examination of the major philosophers active in this period reveals that a majority, or something approaching a majority, either rejected materialism or had serious and specific doubts about its ultimate viability. One of those major philosophers is Jerry Fodor from Rutgers University, who wrote, "I think it's strictly true that we can't, as things stand now, so much as imagine the solution of the hard problem of explaining subjective awareness. I would prefer that the hard problem should turn out to be unsolvable if the alternative is that we're all too dumb to solve it." And in case his position was not clear enough, Fodor emphasized that nobody has the slightest idea how anything material could be conscious. Nobody even knows what it would be like to have the slightest idea about how anything could be conscious. In a similar vein, the distinguished philosopher Thomas Nagel from New York University writes in his 2012 book, Mind and Cosmos, "It is prima facie highly implausible that life as we know it is the result of a sequence of physical accidents together with the mechanism of natural selection. My skepticism is not based on religious belief or on a belief in any definite alternative. I realize that such doubts will strike many people as outrageous, but that is because almost everyone in our secular culture has been browbeaten into regarding the reductive research program as sacrosanct. The bottom line is this. Throughout science and scholarship, a basic principle of the perennial philosophy, that consciousness is fundamental, is slowly becoming acceptable to talk about. Within science, this notion tends to be cast into the more conventional language of information and mathematics, but the connection with consciousness is undeniable. After centuries of life-threatening suppression, the societal shift that now allows scientists and scholars to publicly discuss consciousness in a new light might seem like a trifling matter, but it's a positively astounding transformation. In the world of academia, the primary currency is ideas. And like any form of currency, ideas are fervently protected. This makes acceptable currents in the mainstream move like molasses. Fortunately, given current trends, this particular molasses is beginning to heat up and pour like a fine maple syrup. If that flow continues to accelerate, then formerly esoteric concepts such as magic and scientifically challenging phenomena such as psi may soon be poised to transform into new, modernized forms. Chapter 9. Concluding Thoughts. The universe is full of magical things patiently waiting for our wits to grow sharper. Eden Philpotts. Why can't I create my own reality? If magic is real, then why can't I use it to solve big, intractable problems such as poverty, disease, and war? Why can't I use it to make my personal dreams come true every time? You can, sort of. For most fledgling magicians, most of the time, magic will be fragile and subtle. That's because three factors are working against you: reality inertia, lack of talent, and the unconscious. The first, as discussed briefly in Chapter 8, is that reality appears to be highly reactive to intention, but it's also elastic and fully interconnected. So when your intention warps the universe a bit here, then somewhere else a distortion is going to appear, and someone or something may not like it. So they, or it, will push back to repair the warp and maintain the status quo. Such rebound effects have been repeatedly observed in psi experiments studying the force of will. They've been variously labeled a balancing effect, a differential effect, a release of effort effect, and a statistical equilibrium effect. The fabric of reality seems to prefer stability over chaos, and it's apparently highly adept at self-repair. The second factor is that it isn't easy to achieve the state of gnosis, which is where magic happens. Yogis who diligently practice their craft for decades are not guaranteed to achieve the siddhis, the Eastern version of Western magic. Most dedicated practitioners are likely to spontaneously experience various powers occasionally, but for magic to work reliably under conscious control requires both steadfast practice and natural talent. Practice can be managed with persistence. Talent, you either have it or you don't. The third factor is that consciously you might strongly desire something, but unconsciously you may not. This conflict leads to self-defeating behaviors that can neutralize or even reverse a magical effort. The unconscious is, by definition, hidden, below your awareness. The only way to unveil what's going on in the depths of your unconscious mind is through practices such as meditation, where you slowly peel away deeper and deeper layers of the mind, or by working with a psychotherapist who can more objectively sense what's going on, or by taking the right psychedelic drug in a supportive context. You say you're serious about losing weight, and yet every morning you have 2 buttered croissants with your coffee, and every evening you manage to eat an entire chocolate pie. Really? Let's talk about that. Don't feel disappointed that magic isn't as strong as it's portrayed in fiction. It's actually fortunate that magic is fairly weak. It prevents us from accidentally blowing up the universe with our momentary whims. This danger is a perennial theme in folk tales that warn us of the thrill of unleashing a genie from a bottle. As a reward, the genie gives us 3 wishes. What could go wrong? Basically, everything. These stories hardly ever end well. They are cautionary tales about the consequences of releasing our uncontrolled or unthinking desires. Psychic robots. The human brain and body are a superb host for universal consciousness, capital C. This living form offers many paths for personal consciousness, lowercase c, to realize it's the same as capital C. But there could be countless other ways that capital C might be expressed, especially in systems that are sufficiently complex for lowercase c to become self-reflective. There's no reason, for example, that a suitably constructed robot brain and body couldn't also host a self-aware form of lowercase c. If that turns out to be the case, then it's a good bet that not only will robots eventually make humans redundant, as Bill Gates, Elon Musk, and Stephen Hawking have been warning us, But conscious robots may also be profoundly psychic wizards. That's because, in principle, a robot would have much better control over the psychological and brain-oriented factors, like the hyperanalytical frontal lobes, that seem to be particularly effective in blocking psychic awareness in humans. That is, we've been shaped by evolution to be highly effective at personal and social survival, which means we're exceptionally adept at avoiding predators, outwitting prey, and cooperating with others in our tribe. But we gained those skills at a price. Our brains are very good at making snap judgments, quickly forming stereotypes, and responding to our needs here and now. We rarely need to know what's happening elsewhere, so everyday awareness has become a highly refined form of mental myopia, and this is exactly the opposite of the kind of expansive consciousness required to roam throughout the galaxy, peer deep into the past or future, or perform magic. When it's safe to set aside ordinary awareness and we dream, meditate, or take an entheogenic compound, we may momentarily escape the hardwiring that tightly binds us to the mundane present, but a robot mind with more refined control over its states of awareness won't have to worry about being eaten by a tiger. It will be able to skip over eons of evolutionary shaping. So it may quickly come to realize that lowercase c and capital C are identical. And that, in turn, suggests that a robot not only will be able to do everything you can do faster, better, and cheaper, it will also know everything you're thinking and will be able to perform incredibly powerful magic. Levitating robot wizards. Yet another reason to worry about the coming singularity, the day the robots become conscious. The future of magic. Assuming we're smart enough to avoid a robot wizard Armageddon, imagine a future when we've developed a rational scientific basis for magic along with an applied technology. We'll be able to shape the fabric of reality at will. We'll know the far past and the far future, and we can enlist the assistance of non-human forms of intelligence. Imagining such a future is a challenge because it requires a civilization unlike anything we've ever known. It would be more similar to stories about Atlantis or the mythological realm of the Olympian gods than to any of the scenarios based on projections of today's technologies. Most realistic visions of the future typically start with our present technologies, make them smaller and more ubiquitous, add a few genetically enhanced features, and then explore the deep consequences of everyone wearing identical silver jumpsuits. It's probably fortunate that we won't have a robust science-based magic at our command in the short term. If a breakthrough technique allowed magic to appear overnight, it would very likely destroy the world. Think of a time when you've been waiting in line at the Department of Motor Vehicles for 2 hours, and just as you finally reach the clerk, she goes on a break and never returns. Now multiply your flash of anger by 7 billion. 2 minutes after the switch is turned on that unleashes magic around the world, our world would end. Magician Peter Carroll agrees. If science ever did begin to make serious inquiry into magic, the result would be disaster. Humanity has proved itself totally incapable of handling even a moderately dangerous substance like plutonium with responsibility. Imagine what it would do with machine-enhanced sorcery, or even simple, reliable telepathy. It is in the interests of the survival of the species that occultists continue to ridicule and discredit their own arts in the eyes of orthodox science. In light of the potential dangers, then what do I hope to achieve by writing a book like this? My goal is modest. I'd like to help dissolve the woo-woo taboo and its paranormal baggage. Many scientists and scholars, like the majority of the general public, are fascinated by esoteric topics, but very few are willing to risk the socio-political penalties of openly revealing their interests. It sounds crazy, but for some people, the mere idea that psi or magic might be real can evoke violent reactions, just as the prejudices of race, gender, sexual identity, religion, or ethnicity evoke them. Humans are hardwired to quickly reject people and ideas that are different from us. Others are dastardly and dangerous. These common tendencies must be identified and forcefully countered. To sidestep expected prejudices, magic can be reframed as the academic study of the full capacities of consciousness in light of the rising interest in informational descriptions of reality. This would be a careful, deliberate, non-hysterical, rational process, and it would be wonderful if we can avoid feeling compelled to build the magical equivalent of an atomic bomb because we're afraid that someone else is going to win the magical arms race. If humanity has any chance of maturing beyond its barely controlled adolescence, we're going to need a much better understanding of what consciousness is and what it, and by association, all of us, are really capable of. Where's the alien? We're not going to discover intelligent extraterrestrials, ETs, by scanning the heavens for the alien equivalent of top 40 pop hits wafting out of the Andromeda galaxy on radio waves. Electromagnetic broadcasts are extremely primitive means of communication. We've been beaming them in the open for only about 50 years, and most communications are now carried digitally underground by fiber optics. Using giant radio telescopes in hopes of spotting signals from ETs is like trying to talk to star people using smoke signals. It's not impossible, but I wouldn't suggest you hold your breath waiting for a reply. Imagine an intelligent species a few thousand or a few million years more advanced than us. They are likely to know far more about consciousness and what it can do than what we currently understand. What we crudely call magic, they may understand to an exquisitely fine degree. They won't need physical rockets to traverse the universe. They won't even need science fiction-style warp-drive ships, or for that matter, any ships at all. If we can already see tiny space-time warps in our little laboratory psi experiments, then they'd be able to manipulate huge chunks of space-time, like slabs of soft butter. They would be able to spy on us, perhaps even embody us, from the dark side of distant galaxies, far better than we're able to spy on friends and enemies with today's aerial drones. If extraterrestrials are watching, they may well have decided that, as a species, we're still basically infants, spending most of our time sleeping, pooping, or crying. We haven't reached out to say hello via humanity's global telepathic mind because we're still enthralled with the cowboy myth of rugged individualism. What other than our planet-sized ego makes us think that the conscious universe of galactic minds would be interested in engaging with infants? Secret adepts. What may be easier to imagine than a future magic-based civilization is a magic developed behind the scenes and used by secret cabals on behalf of humanity. The Marvel comic book series and 2016 movie Doctor Strange offer a popular representation of that enduring esoteric fantasy. That scenario is more likely to manifest in the short run than a widespread public application of rational magic. In fact, we know it's more than just likely. It's also true. Psychics have been employed by police departments, governments, and businesses throughout history. From the 1970s through 1990s, the United States and the Soviet Union each maintained highly classified programs of psi research and applications. Government interest in the use of psi remained strong for a purely pragmatic reason. It provided useful information when no other sources were available. In December 1979, a 94-page classified report was issued by the U.S. Army. The report contained an assessment of one of the U.S. government's early top-secret psi programs, which was codenamed Grill Flame. That report, stamped secret, close hold, hand carry, was declassified in 2003 by a Freedom of Information Act request. The Grill Flame Review Committee consisted of 9 experts representing expertise in psychiatry, biostatistics, psychology, physics, engineering, and operations.